Welcome, everybody, to the Foreign Press Association's latest press conference. Is it the first of the new year? I can't quite remember. It's between plague and New Year and wars in every corner of the world. It's difficult to keep track sometimes. We are fortunate today to have a timely intervention from Hazmik Ejian and Muin Rabbani, who wrote an article in the indispensable magazine Past Blue, exposing what they felt was, let us say, I invented a word for what I sent out yesterday, the tortuosine pace of the ICC prosecutor Karim Khan. The ostensible basis of their complaint and everybody else's is that Karim Khan, a British QC, acted extremely promptly when President Putin invaded the U Ukraine, and rightly so as well. I'm certainly not complaining about that. Nobody who's concerned with justice would be. But the fact that months later, with up to 30, it's who's counting, 30,000 dead, untold wounded, Gaza looking like classical Carthage with salt ploughed into the ruins. Where is he? There's no sort of signs of an investigation. And this isn't to prejudge the issue, but we have to remember that the mere threat of an investigation is enough to make people think twice. If you know that people are watching and that there might be consequences. And to do this, we have the ICJ, which confuses the issue, but the International Court of Justice, as our guests will probably help us explain, is set up to regulate disputes between states. And the dispute here is between South Africa and essentially Israel, where South Africa is maintaining that the Genocide Convention applies, which creates a statutory duty upon member states to intervene. Now, the ICJ is a different issue, and it's concerned with individual.
ICC, you mean?
ICC, yes, is the International Criminal Court, was set up in many, many years ago, under Clinton, in fact, who signed onto it and then unsigned at the last minute in a typical Clintonian coitus interruptus move, which allows for individual prosecution. Now, this is the one that notoriously Slobodan Milosevic, for whom it was mostly designed, did it. And then it followed on the international tribunals for the former Yugoslavia and former Rwanda, which held up the fairly novel idea that people who politically and militarily cause mass murder and death and destruction should be held responsible for their actions. And this was sort of basic principle of Nuremberg, which was somewhat shelved for all these years. So what we have is a prosecutor set up, supposedly independent, appointed by, with the connivance of the great powers, Karim Khan, who's refusing, well, to investigate. That's all he has to do. He doesn't even have to initiate the prosecution. He has to show signs of investigation and announce this, and he hasn't. So this was the basis of the complaint of the article that Hazmik and Muin wrote for Past Blue. And they suggest, and of course, those of us of suspicious bent will indeed agree, that there are extraneous political reasons rather than just the facts why the ICC prosecutor has not yet moved on the manifest prima facie war crimes being committed in Gaza. I'm not talking about the causes, not talking about which side anyone is on, but if anyone can doubt that shooting prisoners waving white flags, your own people indeed, that bombing apartment blocks, that shooting up hospitals is suspicious in terms of war crimes, then they are on a different planet. So, welcome to this planet, Hazmik. I think you promised to come in on this and explain the world in a couple of sentences.
Thank you, Ian, and thank you for the invitation to this webinar. Briefly, you had also asked that perhaps to say a few words about my own background. I worked in the UN for nearly 30 years. I retired in summer of 22, had worked in peacekeeping, in special political missions, 8 years with UNICEF. Most of my years were spent in the field, in conflict situations or post-conflict. And 6 years prior to my retirement, I was a director of the within the Department of Political and Peacebuilding Affairs. I was the director for Security Council Affairs Division, which meant sitting for 6 years nearly every day in Security Council proceedings, meetings, SCAD, as the acronym stands for Security Council Affairs Division, is basically the secretariat of the Security Council. Actually, it was in that capacity that my political antenna went up when in November 2021, Karim Khan delivered his first briefing to the Security Council. And I had been familiar with Karim Khan's work prior to his appointment as ICC prosecutor. His first appointment in the UN was special advisor, head of mission for what was called, or is still called, UNITAT. That's the mission that was created in 2018 to look into accountability into the crimes committed by ISIL-Daesh, mostly related to crimes against the Yazidis. That mission was created under a resolution adopted in late 2017. UK was the pen holder, it was the initiator. It successfully, for good reasons, had the resolution adopted. And perhaps then, not very surprisingly, UK national was appointed as the head of UNITAT, Karim Khan.
We should explain the UN jargon. The pen holder is the country that That's responsible for collating the drafts and putting...
That's initiating, collating the draft, negotiating with other Security Council members, etc. That's another perhaps topic of what being a pen holder in the Security Council entails. A lot has been written. There's a lot of criticism of the system. So by the by, Karim Khan was appointed as special advisor, head of mission of UNITAT. He took up the post in 2018 and until 2021, when he was appointed as ICC prosecutor, he used to come to the Security Council every 6 months to deliver a periodic report on progress made. The reason why I'm saying this is because even then, his style of presenting had this impression, and it had made the impression on me personally, as I said, having sat in Security Council meetings over 6 years, you pick up certain styles, certain substance versus more demonstrative, more perhaps, if I may say self-centered presentation, less progress, reports on progress, but rather I had a meeting with that person, I did. So that was the impression that Karim Khan had already left on me. And I must say, when Security Council visited Iraq for the first time in spring of 2019, Karim Khan was there. He was anxious to meet Security Council members again. One was left with the impression that it had to do more with self-promotion rather than the substance of the work that he was doing.
Can we consider his appointment? I mean, from a cynical point of view, he's British, which is what they wanted. Very
for that
British
job.
Queen's Council. And he's Muslim, which means they can say nya nya to the third world and say, look, we have a Muslim in this job.
Perhaps, but I am quite certain that his appointment as the first head of UNITAT, and again, UK as a pen holder, etc., in addition to his legal background, did play a role in his appointment. Now, Coming back to what I initially mentioned, he appeared in the Security Council in November 2021, 6 months after his appointment as ICC prosecutor. And the agenda item was the periodic report, ICC report on investigation into Libya. It was interesting. I paid particular attention to that briefing, again, having heard him in the council on previous occasions, because I was interested in two specific things. One was, it was, I thought, quite a stretch from having been head and senior advisor to UNITAT, having been appointed as ICC prosecutor. But I was also aware how poorly his predecessor, Fatou Bensouda, had been treated in the Security Council, not by all council members, but particularly by one or two Security Council permanent members, the hostility shown to her. And I wanted to see the contrast, or what was it that Karim Khan was going to introduce in his first briefing. And not surprisingly enough, of course, he started with a very lofty presentation of his vision for ICC's work. Something to the effect that, as we have quoted in our past blue article, something to the effect to ensure he saw it his responsibility, ICC's responsibility, to ensure that the tomorrows of humankind would be better than yesterday's of the humankind. Very lofty, very beautifully articulated, I must say, and delivered. And even more so when he emphasized that he saw it his responsibility to ensure synergies between Security Council mandate and ICC mandate, to ensure that no war crime goes unpunished when it comes to war crimes and genocide. But then what really, really caught my attention, and I'm certain I was not the only one sitting in the council chamber that day listening to him, he repeated three times, not once, but three times, that his priorities as ICC prosecutor would be only those cases referred to ICC by the UN Security Council. Now, at that time, there were 16 open investigations in ICC because the Ukraine, which at it then became the 17th, had not yet become an issue. He mentioned, emphasized three times, and I think the reason why he was doing so was to signal to those who were paying attention that whatever his predecessor had done, and in particular, the investigations into Afghanistan and Palestine, two issues that had raised the ire, especially of the US, which had then revoked Bensouda's US visa in 2019, and then had smacked her and a few other officials of ICC senior officials with sanctions. This was a remarkable statement that he made. And again, this was way before even Ukraine, the Russian invasion of Ukraine in February 2022, and the opening, the very rapid opening of the investigation, ICC investigation of Ukraine.
If I could just interrupt, this is significant because for those who don't know, there are three mechanisms through which the ICC prosecutor can open an investigation. One is through referral by the Security Council. A second is at the request of state parties to the ICC, in other words, a direct request by one or more governments. And a third is at the initiative of the Office of the Prosecutor, provided it is the decision is endorsed by what is called the pretrial chamber, a panel of judges. And this is significant because Karim Khan basically said he would neglect investigations that were not specifically referred to his office by the Security Council. And it was, as Hasmik just indicated, a way of informing the powers that be that they no longer need to worry about the Palestine and Afghanistan investigations proceeding. Sorry for that interruption.
No, thank you. Thank you, Moin. Very helpful.
I interrupt your interruption? At the time of the negotiations, it was highly significant because part of the package that the then human rights activists on the Security Council were involved in was trying to persuade the Global South that this wasn't going to be an overloaded, permanent five-dominated, look-after-our-own operation. So that's why all those other avenues were put in. And this is lifting up the ladder on 20 or 30 years of negotiations.
That's right. Just to add that the two referrals that Karim Khan mentioned referred to in his briefing in November 2021, two cases, Libya and Sudan, specifically Darfur. He also then took a clear swipe at his predecessor, saying that perhaps there was a time when the the resources were too thinly spread over too many investigations, etc. Just to conclude my opening remarks, it's to emphasize that the central argument in the op-ed Impasse Blue that we presented was not a legal one. And as the opening paragraph indicated, we were focusing on the fact that we believe Karim Khan has, in an unprecedented manner, has politicized the office of the prosecutor and thus eroded the credibility of ICC just at a time when it needs to be addressed to restore or to, in some way, give it the legitimacy that it deserved. So again, we have not addressed, and I'm not a lawyer, I don't have a background in law. My background is in political science, politics. We have not addressed any specific legal issues, such as whether Karim Khan, unlike his predecessor, has issued preventive statements, whether a reasonable prospect for conviction is the same as a realistic prospect of for conviction, et cetera. So those are, I'm mentioning this because subsequently, I have to say, we had the article published in late November 2023 last year. Since then, there has been a huge storm over a gathering storm of criticism regarding Karim Khan. So not only from a political perspective, but even from legal perspective, which we have not addressed. There are more competent bodies who are at the moment addressing, including the UN Special Rapporteur for OPT, even the South African application to ICJ. There is a mention, actually, that despite the fact that on November 17, 2023, five state parties referred the investigation into the state of Palestine to ICC with a specific request to the existing investigation to vigorously investigate the acts that have been committed that they consider as war crimes since October 7th and subsequently. And actually the South African application does state that even since then, there is no indication of any progress made by Karim Khan in the investigation of the into the state of Palestine.
Where is Karim Khan?
Well, can you come in here, because we need to explain the geopolitical context, of course.
Yes.
Bearing in mind, I think it's worth reiterating, because all of us get this confused. The International Court of Justice is adjudicating on a claim for a preemptive injunction by South Africa that there's a sort of prima facie case that genocide is happening and the guilty party should stop forthwith This is being fought on two different grounds. One is that the court doesn't have jurisdiction. In other words, yes, there's a murder, but it's not in your patch, so you can off. And the second is that this is not what is happening. Sort of two insubstantial arguments, one might say. But yes. They are, in the case of the ICC, the case is that the prosecutor is not investigating the people Correct. Who are perpetrating manifest war crimes.
Yes.
Prima facie war crimes. And everybody else seems to accept that there are war crimes going on, except, of course, the British and American governments, which claim this is self-defense. Nobody else seems to believe that.
Well, as you've just indicated, the difference is that the International Court of Justice adjudicates disputes between states, and the International Criminal Court investigates matters of individual criminal responsibility. And the ICC has a mandate to investigate four categories of crimes: war crimes, crimes against humanity, genocide, and crimes of aggression. And I think what is significant here, taking into account what Hasmik just explained about Khan's indication to the Security Council that he repeatedly indicated he would prioritize only those cases referred to him by the Security Council. This was several months before the Russian invasion of Ukraine in February 2022. And what's telling is that the moment the first Russian soldier set foot on Ukrainian soil, all of a sudden, the principle that he had enunciated to the Security Council went out the window.
Only four days later, on 28th of February.
Yes. And I think it was only a week later, if I'm correct, that Karim Khan showed up in Kiev. He announced an immediate opening of an investigation, appointed an investigatory team, was giving regular updates, and within the space of a calendar year, issued an indictment against the head of state of a permanent member of the UN Security Council. Now, again, the question here is not about the legitimacy of the prosecution of Russia. Clearly, all individuals who violate the Rome Statute need to be held accountable. But compare that to what's called the situation in Palestine. This is an investigation that has been ongoing for years. The request initially arrived in The Hague, in the office of the prosecutor, in 2015. Now, people have been seeking...
Apologies for interrupting. Actually, a senior advisor to Karim Khan, who's been publishing rebuttals or opinion pieces, his argument is that actually it goes back even further in 2008 or 2009 under Ocampo Moreno.
Yes. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because people who have... been coming to Khan's defense, who I should add are increasingly few and far between, have been pointing to the record of his predecessor, Luis Ocampo Moreno, and thereafter Fatou Bensouda, and seeking to point to their failures. But I think the fact of the matter is that irrespective of whatever failures one may rightly or wrongly want to ascribe to Karim Khan's predecessor, when he assumed office, all these preliminary issues, whether the ICC has standing to investigate, whether the state of Palestine is authorized to demand an investigation, whether an investigation can begin, and so on, all these preliminaries had been fully resolved. And in fact, an investigation, at least formally, had been initiated. Yet Khan has repeatedly given clear indications that he considers this a dead file and is doing nothing about it. So if one looks, for example, at the 2023 annual report of the Office of the Prosecutor of the ICC, which was published in August of last year, in other words, less than 2 months before the current crisis erupted, there is only one paragraph in it about Palestine, basically saying, yes, there is an investigation. And in none of the thematic sections of that annual report, which make repeated reference to numerous investigations, in none of the thematic sections is there a single reference to the Palestine investigation. I think it's fair to say that the ICC's Palestine investigation exists merely as a formality, and that in practice, it does not exist. There is no progress. There are no updates, certainly compared to the other investigations that the Office of the Prosecutor likes to talk about so much. That takes us to the 7th of October and what we have seen since then. Now, to be clear, the Office of the Prosecutor is not investigating Israel. He's investigating the situation in Palestine, which means that any suspected crimes by any party committed on the territory of the state of Palestine is subject to his investigation. And here I think there are two quite concerning developments. The first is the very clear double standards that Karim Khan has mobilized to look at suspected Israeli versus suspected Palestinian war crimes. If you look at his statements since the 7th of October, he has explicitly denounced and condemned what he views as Palestinian war crimes in no uncertain terms. He's in fact already, you know, pronounced a verdict on them, so to speak, and using some of the strongest language available to make his views on these actions known. Well, he has been very legalistic, technical, hesitant when discussing suspected Israeli war crimes. You know, may be this, could be that, needs to be investigated. That's the first concern. The second concern is that the ICC will only indict and prosecute cases where national courts fail or refuse to do so. So the ICC may find that a particular individual is a war criminal or has committed genocide or crimes against humanity, but would not prosecute that individual unless the national courts fail to hold that individual to account. And here, Khan has made a number of statements praising the Israeli judiciary, which to my view clearly indicates that he considers any Israeli crimes to be within the purview of a judiciary that has been repeatedly denounced and exposed as a sham in every credible human rights report. That has looked
and also by that. UN, if I may.
Yes.
Also by UN independent commissions of inquiry over and over repeatedly.
Precisely. And I'm speculating, but we may well end up in a situation where Khan will indict Palestinians for crimes committed in the context of the situation in Palestine since 2014, but will not indict any Israelis, irrespective of the crimes that they will be found to have committed, because he considers that to be within the purview of the discredited Israeli judicial apparatus.
Can we, one of the consequences of this is that if an international arrest warrant is issued, for example, by the ICC, this means that it creates an obligation on states across the world, as in the case of Putin going to South Africa for the BRIC conference, to arrest the parties concerned. And this is something I know that the Israeli government was extremely concerned about and almost many senior officials consulted their lawyers along with their travel agents before traveling, because several had been held across the world on the basis of a universal warrant. So how successful would this gambit be? Because this means he's not just part of the adjudication, but part of the enforcement in a sense.
Well, Israeli impunity has almost become basic principles of international humanitarian law. You know, laws have been changed in a number of countries to ensure that Israeli suspected of war crimes are not arrested and held to account under principles of universal jurisdiction. But as you point out, if the office of the prosecutor identifies an Israeli commander or decision maker or official as responsible for one of the crimes within the ICC's mandate and indicts that person and issues an arrest warrant, well, I think this will put a lot of countries before a choice. They will have to make a choice between their commitment to Israeli impunity on the one hand and their commitment to upholding international law and the mandate of the ICC on the other. And I think this is much more of an issue for European countries, for example, than it is for a country like the United States, because the United States is not a state party to the ICC, whereas European governments are, and constantly proclaim the importance of the ICC and of its mandate and of its activity. So this would present a real conundrum for them. But again, referring to what you said, Ian, at the beginning of this discussion, the mere indication that someone is being watched will tend to make them operate a little more carefully. And we're seeing nothing in this respect. Karim Khan visited Egyptian Sinai in October, I believe.
29th.
Yes. And thereafter, in what many consider to be a somewhat shocking development, he paid an informal visit to Israel, which was clearly coordinated with the Israeli government, which is not only perpetrating all these crimes in the Gaza Strip, but has been vilifying the International Criminal Court for many years. And he went there to meet with the families of captives, Israeli captives and hostages being held in the Gaza Strip, and came out with exceptionally explicit, strong condemnations and denunciations of Hamas and other Palestinian armed groups. And then had, I believe, a meeting that lasted all of 10 minutes.
It was intended to last 10 minutes, but he was generous enough to extend it a bit further to meet with some of the Palestinians.
Yes.
Create an outrage.
Yeah. And Palestinian human rights groups, mm-hmm. who had been repeatedly seeking to meet with him, yet have been consistently denied by his office. He was finally prepared to meet with them in Ramallah, and they were so outraged by his conduct and his embrace of double standards, if you will, that they refused to meet with him.
Let's also to recall that in November in The Hague, Karim Khan readily met with families of Israeli hostages together with their lawyers, and none such courtesy was granted to Palestinians who for many years have been requesting to meet with Karim Khan in The Hague.
Sorry, he was playing to a gallery, clearly, and it's the,
yes,
what one would say, the usual gallery. We've got some questions coming in, and we should allow Kristen Salomi says, Israel described its military operation in Gaza as self-defense. Can you talk about the rule of proportionality under the Geneva Conventions? This is slightly veering off the topic, I think, but perhaps you can, because in the sense that the ICC will be adjudicating on breaches of the Geneva Conventions.
Well, under Article 51 of the UN Charter, the right of self-defense exists only in relation to the actions of other states. The right of self, and this has been confirmed in the 2004 Wall ruling by the International Court of Justice, a state does not possess a right of self-defense against a territory it occupies. Israel has the right to protect its citizens from harm, but it does not have a right of self-defense to wage war as conventionally understood. Even more importantly, as the occupying power, Israel has a whole range of responsibilities towards the residents of these occupied territories, what are known as protected persons under the 1949 Geneva Conventions, that are absolute. So, for example, it does not have the right to prohibit the entry of any goods deemed essential to the maintenance.
Not only does not have the right, but it is actually
it has a positive obligation
defined as a war crime.
Yes, and it has not only does not have the right to withhold these items, it has a positive obligation to supply them. As far as proportionality is concerned, that I think is a more detailed discussion, but it basically means that the scale of an attack on a particular object has to be proportional to the military advantage that would be gained by such an attack. And this is intended basically to ensure the absolute minimum and preferably the prohibition of any harm to civilians. And here there's the obscene concept of collateral damage, but that basically means that civilians can never be the direct object of a military attack under any circumstances. And as we've seen in the Gaza Strip, an entire society has been walking around with a bullseye, with a target on its back.
And if I may add, Moin, any discussion of proportionality would need to be framed within international humanitarian law.
Correct.
From inside the United Nations, did you see any signs of pressure being applied? Can you give instances of where, the U.S. ambassador came knocking on Karim Khan's door and said, "Don't you dare"?
But what I did witness was what was done to his predecessor, Fatou Bensouda, as I mentioned. The hostility to which she was subjected during her periodic briefings to the Security Council, in sharp contrast to the way Karim Khan was treated by the same states who had demonstrated such hostility with kid gloves. The fact that those same countries, one or two, who had taken such a strong position vis-a-vis his predecessor, who have not made a single utterance regarding his work,
No criticism.
Should tell us something. If I may, earlier when discussing the issues that Moin was addressing, let's not forget that before October 7th, between June 2021, when Karim Khan was appointed as ICC prosecutor, and October 7th, 2023, actually, his first statement, I believe, was on October 12th or 13th. Not a single utterance, not a single statement had been issued from the office of the prosecutor or Karim Khan himself. This is despite the fact that, according to reports, in 2022, there was a huge spike in the number of Palestinians killed in the West Bank. Some horrendous 82% spike in the number of those. I hate to say the number, 82% spike in the Palestinians who had been killed in West Bank in 2022 in comparison with the previous year. Now, one would think that Karim Khan, who was already in the office of the prosecutor, and given the fact that some nearly 200 Palestinian civil society organizations had been demanding, requesting that Karim Khan issues a preventive statement regarding the spike, the increase in the harassment of Palestinians in the West Bank, not a single word was heard from him. So this is, again, to put it in a context, and everything, I think, became even more magnified again with the speed with which he proceeded on the Ukraine file.
We might note that President Biden has even wagged a finger at Israel about the casualties in the West Bank.
Yes,
Karim Khan hasn't.
Interesting. Yes, as I said, even before October 7th, what was taking place in the West Bank in 22 and also in 2023, before October 7th, were unseen before, unprecedented. Again, not a single word. And again, to compare with Karim Khan visiting Ukraine, he visited Ukraine four times within 1 year, within February 2022 and March 23. He immediately announced the 3 months later, he announced the deployment of the largest investigative team, 42 investigators, forensic experts, etc. Ukraine field office is the largest that ICC has. Now, the question to ask of Karim Khan, including his senior advisor. We keep on hearing how he established an investigative team, how he's appointed a P5, and how he's going to have a D1 who will be directly reporting to him.
These are UN officials, by
yes,
the way.
Yes, their titles, their yeah. ranking, their standing in a bureaucratic hierarchy, let's say. And yet, again, unlike in the case of Ukraine or investigation of the Russian crimes in Ukraine, no further details. There is no, I for one would like to know, so he has an investigative team assigned. Who are they? How many? To this day, not a single ICC investigator has visited Palestine.
And if I can just add very briefly, again, taking into account that the ICC and ICJ are separate institutions with separate mandates, I find it quite telling that Israel is being accused of genocide pursuant to the 1948 Genocide Convention at the ICJ, that multiple countries have used a similar characterization to describe Israel's conduct in the Gaza Strip, and that there has been not a single word from the office of the ICC prosecutor about whether this is something he's looking into, whether he's investigating genocide, and if so, what the status of that investigation is. Absolutely nothing. It's almost as if he's in a state of denial and in hiding.
Well, Rupa Shah is coming, is asking about the Security Council. How can the Security Council send anything to the ICC for investigation with difficulty, I think, is the answer coming out. But one of the questions here, rather than just bemoaning and wringing our hands about it, is what can be done about it? What means are there to put... Obviously, this is an issue that's the streets are filled with people appalled at what's happening in Gaza. Mm-hmm. And how could that popular pressure be focused to draw attention to Karim Khan, that the gallery he's playing to isn't the same as down in the stalls?
If I... Please. May I go, Moin? Starting with the comment rather than a question. Well, it is a question. But of course, needless to say, that there could not, there could be no expectation of a Security Council referring either Palestine by resolution for investigation, referral to ICC, just as there could be no expectation of Russia agreeing to a referral to ICC regarding Ukraine. As Moin mentioned, there are several venues, right, through which ICC can initiate an investigation. Security Council is only one option. State parties can make requests, as in November, South Africa, Bolivia, Bangladesh, Comoros, and Djibouti did. And from what I understand, yesterday in the GA, Chile has indicated that they would be adding their voice, making a request to ICC for a vigorous investigation of what's taking place in Gaza. There are perhaps some options. None of them are good. I have seen reference made by the UN Special Rapporteur for OPT, Francesca Albanese, requesting or appealing to national judicial bodies to initiate cases where they have such jurisdiction. To quarter, given the very slow and ineffective work done by Karim Khan ICC. Another option, and again, not with much prospect of success, is the creation of a special tribunal for Gaza, similar, let's say, what was done for Yugoslavia and Rwanda.
Now, but that would take for a Security Council precisely.
But there is another option. Actually, Moin and I were discussing this a few days ago with another friend who's a lawyer. And that is the GA possibly taking up under Uniting for Peace resolution, the possibility of adopting a resolution for the establishment of a special tribunal. However, as we know, such resolutions, GA resolutions, are mere recommendations. And even if that was to take place, it is difficult to see that member states would be providing the resources, the necessary support, et cetera, for such a tribunal to succeed. As we know, both the Yugoslavia, as you mentioned, Ian, Yugoslavia and Rwanda special tribunals were established by Security Council resolutions.
If I can just add, I think the fundamental problem here is Karim Khan panders to power. And because of that fundamental character of his office, he is not going to cross the United States or the United Kingdom and so on. And so I think really the only way that this issue can be satisfactorily resolved is if and when a different prosecutor assumes that office. There is simply this prospect that Karim Khan is going to take his job seriously when it comes to investigating the situation in Palestine are literally zero and are going to remain zero until maybe the last few weeks of his mandate. I don't know enough about the workings of the ICC to know whether the Assembly of State Parties has the right to revoke his mandate and potentially replace him. But even then, it would be a stretch.
If he were, for example, a mere president of Harvard, there would be huge amount of money and resources being put into investigating every sentence he's ever written for plagiarism, for any possible default. How did
someone whose wife is a plagiarist, probably?
Yes, for example. So you know, it's why is no one prepared to devote those type of resources into investigating Karim Khan that were used to investigate the president of Harvard on far more nugatory grounds, it would appear.
Perhaps without suggesting any, not perhaps, but without suggesting any malpractice or any abuse of funds, etc. One of the arguments made by his defenders, let's say his senior advisor again, who has been writing rebuttals related to Karim Khan's legal critics, is that he, unlike his predecessors, using the plural, because unlike Ocampo and unlike Bensouda, how Karim Khan is the first to actually allocate, make budgetary allocation to the investigation of Palestine, something that has never done before, etc. Fair enough, but then again, when you really drill down into details, to think that in 2023 budget, he allocated about 1 million, just short of 1 million euros to Palestine, with a larger amount, well, needless to say, Ukraine has a lion's share of the budget, but even a larger amount has been allocated for the investigation into Philippines than to Palestine, and without minimizing grave war crimes, the allegations that have been committed in the Philippines, for which an investigation has been initiated by the ICC. But to think of the gravity, the scale, the magnitude of what has been going on, not only in Gaza, even before October 7th, in the West Bank and East Jerusalem and in Gaza, and the argument being made in defense of Karim Khan that he's made budgetary allocations is quite, I have to say, it's not laughable because it's too serious a matter, but does not stand on two legs, really. Additionally, his office, his senior advisor, is boasting about the fact that Karim Khan is the first one to appeal to donors to solicit additional funds for investigation for Palestine, while at the same time emphasizing that any donor contributions to ICC cannot be earmarked, again, is quite telling, boasting about Belgium making a donation of $5 million to ICC in response, allegedly, reportedly, to Khan's appeal. Again, if it's not earmarked, and Belgium has held a very consistent national position when it comes to the issue of Palestine and the situation on the ground. So,
and support for the ICC.
Yes. So, one would wish to perhaps be fair and look into issues where one can defend. But even having done that, I find it very difficult to either defend Karim Khan's position or defend the argument that he's done more for the Palestinian file than any of his predecessors. The facts just don't speak to such a defense, to such an argument.
And if I just briefly add, our article was entitled Karim Khan is unfit for purpose for a reason. I think hope and expectation regarding his role on this file does not and should not exist.
Well, I think we're rapidly, it looks to me, of British origins myself, that he is actually very, very British. The idea that you kick something upstairs and you never say no, you just keep kicking it down the road, kicking it along the corridor.
I'm busy with it.
Yes. He seems to have completely adopted British standards on this one. We are coming to a close now. It's shame. We want to discuss this more often because it is important that we get clarification between the ICJ and the ICC, and that people get to know the ramifications of what can and can't be done. Because, of course, as many people outside, they simply lump all of this as the UN has failed. When, you know, the UN, as we know, is a many splendid thing, where some points like Francesca Albanese are working very hard and walk going out on a limb, and others are cowering deep in the heart of the bureaucracy to make sure that nothing ever gets pointed at them.
And then if I may just add, the International Court of Justice is a UN institution. The ICC is not.
Yes, it was set up by a party of states because of the United States, mostly, as I remember, and plus others in the... They're all very happy to invoke it when it suits them. I mean, yes, but the story of the US and the ICC is especially unsavory and double dealing, and the shadow of Vietnam hung over it, of course, because the United States would never, ever, ever have something like the My Lai massacre happen on its watch. And give the massacre of a couple of hundred Vietnamese and wrap over the knuckles. It would follow complete judicial procedure.
That's why we have the Hague Invasion Act.
Yes.
So, if I may, the fact, I think it's worth mentioning Afghanistan, the fact that there has been zero, even worse than Palestine. The question of Afghanistan has been completely deprioritized.
It was mentioned in some of today's newspapers that the United Kingdom has denied that the ICC has got anything to look at in Afghanistan, and at the same time has handed over 30 million in compensation to acknowledged victims of British military excesses in Afghanistan.
That's like the Harvey Weinstein equivalent of international relations.
Yes. Actually, the U.S. hostility towards Ben Suda, towards ICC, preceded the Palestine file. It was initially on Afghanistan, if I'm not mistaken.
So we have another conference in the next week or so on the crisis in pediatric AIDS provisions internationally. Equally sensitive, and we'll be having more. We're hoping to have a panel in the near future about the role of journalism in human rights, or what can be done. And it is something that some journalists approach as that human rights is a partisan issue. And if you have something on human rights, maybe you should have a counterview. I don't see what the counterview is, but that's what happens when you demonize institutions like the ICJ and the ICC. But I'd like to thank you both for a thoroughgoing and minute discussion. And I wish more of the members were in there. I was telepathically getting their questions and passing them on, I think. So let us hope to see you again soon. And I'd like to say Happy New Year, but it seems a bit of a urination in the wind almost, the way things are going so far. So thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you to FBA. Thank you. Bye-bye.